The curate had not been a week in the parish, but the autumn morning, proving fine, he thought he would make a little watercolour sketch, showing a distant view of the Corvesgate ruin. The sketch occupied him a longer time than he had anticipated. The luncheon hour drew on, and he felt hungry. Quite near him was a stone-built old cottage. He entered it, and was received by an old woman. "Can you give me something to eat, my good woman?" he said. She held her hand to her ear. "Can you give me something for lunch? Bread and cheese? Anything will do?" "Well, I'm going to have my own bit of dinner in no such long time hence. 'Tis taters and cabbage, boiled with a scantling of bacon. Will you like it? But I suppose 'tis the wrong sort, and that you'd sooner have bread and cheese."
"No, I'll join you. Call me when it's ready. I'm just out here."
"Aye, I've seen ye drawing the old stones, Bandy. Sure, 'tis well some folk have nothing better to do with their time. Very well, I'll call ye."
He went out and resumed his painting, till in about 7 or 10 minutes the old woman appeared at her door and held up her hand. The curate washed his brush, went to the brook, rinsed his hands, and proceeded to the house.
"There's yours," she said, pointing to the table. "I'll have my bit yer," and she denoted the settle.
"Why not join me?"
"Oh, faith, I don't want to eat with my betters, not I." And she continued firm in her resolution, and ate apart.
The vegetables had been well cooked over a wood fire, and the bacon was well boiled. The curate ate heartily. When he had finished, he asked her how much he owed for the repast.
"Oh, I don't want to be paid for that bit of snack and believe."
"But really, you must take something. It was an excellent meal."
"'Tis all my own growing, that's true, but I don't take money for a bit of victuals. I've never done such a thing in my life."
"I should feel much happier if you would." She seemed unsettled by his feeling, and added, as by compulsion,
"Well, then, I suppose 2 pence won't hurt ye."
He thereupon argued no further, paid the limited sum demanded, and went to the door. "And where does that road lead?" he asked, by way of engaging her in a little friendly conversation before parting.
"They tell me that it leads to Ankworth."
"And how far is Ankworth?"
3 miles, they say, but God knows if 'tis true."
"And yet you have never been to Ankworth?"
"Not I, no. There's only 2 places I ever go to, from year's end to year's end. That's once a fortnight to Anglebury, do my bit of marketing, and once a week to my parish church."
"Which is that?"
"Why, Kingscreech."
"Then you are in my parish?"
"Maybe, just on the outskirts."
"Well, I hope we may meet again. Good afternoon to you." When the curate was next talking to his rector, he casually observed, "By the way, that's a curious old soul who lives out towards Corvesgate, old Mrs. I don't know her name, a deaf old woman."
"Oh, you mean old Mrs. Chundle, I suppose."
"She tells me she's lived there 35 years, and goes to 2 places only, from year's end to year's end, to the market town and to church on Sundays."
"To church on Sundays? She rather exaggerates her travels, to my thinking. I've been rector here 13 years, and I've certainly never seen her at church in my time."
"A wicked old woman. What can she think of herself for such deception?"
"She didn't know you belonged here when she said it, and could find out the untruth of her story. I warrant she wouldn't have said it to me."
On reflection, the curate felt this was decidedly a case for his ministrations, and on the first spare morning he strode across to the cottage beyond the ruin.
"Drawing pictures again?" she asked.
"No, I come on a more important matter, Mrs. Chundle. I am the new curate of this parish. I think it was a very culpable, unkind thing of you to tell me you came to church every Sunday, when I find you've not been seen there for years."
"Oh, did I tell you that?"
"You certainly did."
"Well, you could have guessed, after all, that I didn't come to any service. Lord, what's the good of my lumpering all the way to church and back again, when I'm as deaf as a block, huh? Don't you think you could hear the service if you were to sit close to the reading desk and pulpit?
Oh, no, not a word.
I'm sorry. There's one thing I could do, which I would with pleasure, if you'll use it. I could get you an ear trumpet.
'Tis all the same to me.
And you'll come?
Yes. I may as well go there as by yer, I suppose.
The ear trumpet was purchased by the zealous young man, and the next Sunday, to the great surprise of the parishioners when they arrived, Mrs. Chundle was discovered in the front seat of the nave of Kingscreet Church. She was the centre of observation through the whole morning service. The trumpet, elevated at a high angle, shone and flashed in the sitters' eyes as the chief object in the sacred edifice. The curate called the next day to inquire the result of the experiment. As soon as she saw him, she began shaking her head.
No, no, 'twasn't a muscle of good, and so I could have told you for her.
The curate mused. I'll tell you what, Mrs. Chundle, there's one thing more to try, and only one. It's having a sound tube fixed, with its lower mouth in the seat immediately below the pulpit, where you would sit. The tube running up inside the pulpit, with its upper end opening in a bell mouth, just beside the book board. The voice of the preacher enters the bell mouth and is carried down directly to the listener's ear. Do you understand?
Exactly.
And you'll come, if I put it up at my own expense?
I suppose so. I'll try it, even though I said I wouldn't.
The kind-hearted curate, at great trouble to himself, obtained the tube, and on the following Sunday morning it was to be tried. As soon as he came from the vestry, the curate perceived, to his satisfaction, Mrs. Chundle in the seat beneath, erect and at attention, her head close to the lower orifice of the soundpipe, and a look of great complacency that her soul required a special piece of machinery to save it, while other people's could be saved in a commonplace way. In due course, the curate mounted the 8 steps into the wooden octagon, gave out his text, and began to deliver his discourse. It was a fine, frosty morning in early winter, and he had not got far with his sermon when he became conscious of a steam rising from the bell mouth of the tube, obviously caused by Mrs. Chundle's breathing at the lower end, and it was accompanied by a suggestion of onion stew. However, he preached on, while, hoping it would cease, holding in his left hand his finest cambric handkerchief, kept especially for Sunday morning services. At length, no longer able to endure the odour, he lightly dropped the handkerchief into the bell of the tube. He heard a fidgeting below, and presently there arose to him, over the pulpit edge, a hoarse whisper.
The pipe's chocked!
Now, as you will perceive, my brethren, continued the curate, unheeding the interruption, by applying this test to ourselves, suddenly came a violent puff of warm wind, and he beheld his handkerchief rising from the bell of the tube and floating to the pulpit floor. The little boys in the gallery laughed, thinking it a miracle. Mrs. Chundle had, in fact, applied her mouth to the bottom end, blown with all her might, and cleared the tube. In a few seconds, the atmosphere of the pulpit became as before, to the curate's great discomfiture. If you carefully analyze the passage I have quoted, he continued in somewhat uncomfortable accents, you will perceive that it naturally suggests 3 points for consideration. It's not onions, it's peppermint, he said to himself. And pickled cabbage, what a terrible supper she must have made. Thus the reverend gentleman continued strenuously for perhaps 5 minutes longer. Then he could stand it no more. Desperately thrusting his thumb into the hole, he brought his sermon to a premature close. He did not call on Mrs. Chundle the next week, a slight cooling of his zeal for her spiritual welfare being manifest. But he encountered her at the house of another cottager whom he was visiting, and she immediately addressed him as a partner in the same enterprise.
I could hear beautiful,
she said. Yes, every word. Never did I know such a wonderful machine as that there pipe. But you forgot what you was doing once or twice, and put your handkerchief on the tubbin, and stopped the sound a bit. Howsomever, I shall come every Sunday morning regular now, please God. The curate quivered internally. And will you come to my house once a while and read to me?
Of course.
Surely enough, the next Sunday, the ordeal was repeated for him. In the evening, he told his trouble to the rector. You've brought it upon yourself, he said. You don't know this parish so well as I. You should have left the old woman alone.
Well, said the curate, I must do something. I cannot stand this. I shall tell her not to come.
You can hardly do that.
And I've half promised to go and read to her, but I shan't go.
She's probably forgotten by this time that you promised.
A day or two later, a message arrived from her, saying that she wished to see him. Anticipating a terrific attack from the irate old woman, he put off going to her for a day, and when he trudged out towards her house on the following afternoon, it was in a vexed mood. On coming near, he saw to his surprise that the calico curtains of the cottage windows were all drawn. He went up to the door, which was ajar, and a little girl peeped through the opening. "How is Mrs. Chundle?" he asked, blandly.
"She's dead, sir,"
said the girl in a whisper.
"Dead? Mrs. Chundle dead?"
"Yes, sir."
A woman now came. "Yes, 'tis so, sir. She went off quite sudden-like about 2 hours ago. Well, you see, sir, she was over 70 years of age, and last Sunday she was rather late in starting for church, and was very anxious to be in time. So she hurried over much, runned up the hill, which at her time of life she ought not to have done. 2 or 3 times she said she knew 'twas not by your own wish you didn't arrive, and she was eager to hear you again later on. However, 'twas ordained otherwise for the poor soul, and she was soon gone. I've found a real friend at last," she said. "He's a man in 1,000. He's not ashamed of an old woman, and he holds that her soul is worth saving as well as richer people's. She said, I was to give you this." It was a small folded piece of paper, directed to him and sealed with a thimble. On opening it, he found it to be what she called her will, in which she had left him her bureau, case clock, 4-post bedstead, and framed sampler. In fact, all the furniture of any account that she possessed. The curate went out like Peter at the cockcrow, and as he went, his eyes were wet. When he reached a lonely place in the lane, he stood still, thinking, and kneeling down in the dust of the road, rested his elbow in one hand and covered his face with the other. Thus he remained some minutes or so, a black shape on the hot white of the sunned trackway, till he rose, brushed the knees of his trousers, and walked on.